Hey everyone, welcome to the 227th episode of the Internet of Things podcast. This is your host, Stacey Higginbotham, and your co-host,
Kevin Toefel.
And we have an amazing show. We're going to be talking about sleep tracking beds, gesture controls, dicey behavior by Ring. The FTC is looking at ruling around voice-activated speakers and kids. Plus, Apple also uses contractors to listen to your Siri recordings. People don't trust all of the IoT companies. And we've got another security vulnerability. That plus our guest this week is Mike Nefkins, who is the CEO of Resideo, which is the Honeywell spinout. He's going to talk about what the heck Resideo is doing and why it's buying so many companies, plus its vision for the future of the smart home. And you'll also hear from our sponsor this week. It's a new one, Nutanix. So all of this and more awaits you after a message from another one of our sponsors. This week's sponsor is DigitalOcean. The DigitalOcean Developer Cloud simplifies modern app creation by combining the powers of simplicity, love for the developer community, an obsession for customer service, and the advantages of open source. IoT businesses love DigitalOcean for their simple, predictable pay-as-you-go pricing for cloud infrastructure. With flat rates across all data centers, DigitalOcean makes it easy to scale up and expand globally without being surprised by your cloud bill each month. Get started for free with a $50 DigitalOcean credit at do.co/Stacy. That's do.co/Stacey. Alrighty, Kevin. I'm going to get this started off with smart beds. This is partially because I love tracking my sleep. I have a Fitbit. I've tried, I think, the Withings sleep tracker. I've done a lot here because I am weird about sleep. And what is happening is Tempur-Pedic is launching a new, not connected mattress, but a connected mattress base that actually detects if someone is snoring and activates the base to stop them. So my husband is really excited about it because I'll be honest, you guys, I snore. I don't know if you remember, but I did try that snoring device. And actually, it did something similar. The idea was it had microphones. And when it heard me snoring, it would inflate this thing in my pillow and lift my head up. Mm-hmm. That didn't work so well for me. But the idea is similar on the Tempur-Pedic base, except it doesn't have any microphones. What it does is it detects vibration.
Well, so, that I like better than a microphone in the bedroom.
That's what I thought you would say. And this works with the Tempur-Pedic line of mattresses. They didn't test it with any other mattress, but it's possible it would work with other mattresses. And the bed doesn't just measure snoring. It also measures heart and breathing rates. So the tracker will sense the vibrations from snoring. It will adjust the bed. And it's also going to tell you how well you slept the night before.
So we have a non-connected bed and base that's very similar to this. We have the Sleep Number beds with the remotes or wired remotes for each side of the bed. Obviously, you can change your sleep number by adding more or less air to the mattress, but also they raise your head and or your feet. When I was snoring, well, I do snore. So when I snore, my wife occasionally tries to raise up the bed manually, and this would obviously get rid of that manual activity, but it comes at a cost.
The cost of the smart base is $17.99 for a queen size bed.
Yeah. I mean, we paid a lot for our non-snoring bed. So that's in line, I guess.
That, I mean, that is totally in line with it. I don't have a smart base. I do have a base with Wi-Fi. Do not ask me why my bed has Wi-Fi. The only time we've used it is when my husband was playing a prank on me, which was turning on the vibration on the bed, you know. And I was like, what is happening? And he's like, I don't know. It must be malfunctioning. And I was like, ah. And then it would stop. And then, like, he'd hit a button on the app later because I didn't realize it had Wi-Fi. Anyway, the point is that is literally the only time we've used it. Here, I guess this adds to it. But it does two things. One, it fits with my idea, which is we will start seeing smarts embedded in products just as part of the basic product. Going forward, I expect this sort of thing to be in a lot of things. And it'll be just an added little bonus. Like, hey, if you're snoring, this will adjust automatically.
There's tons of potential products like that. I mean, I'm leaning back in my chair with a very bad posture right now. A sensor could detect that and move the chair to make me sit taller, for example.
Yeah, exactly. And so we'll see that. And then two, this actually is nice because it's offering you tracking, but it's also offering action. So it's actually smart in the sense that it's going to do something for you, not just give you data. So
no, it's actionable information.
There we go. So fancy. All right. So I'm pro the Tempur-Pedic smart bed if that's something you want to spend your money on. If it's not, then that's okay too. Next up is something that Kevin and I, we don't often disagree, which probably makes the show super boring, but there's a little disagreement here. Google talked about Project Soli, 5 or 6 years ago, and I was excited about it. This is a gesture-based technology using ultrasonics, and now they showed a video for the Pixel 4 that involves Project Soli, which is gesture-based controls, and you can use it to swipe in the air to move things around. I think it's cool.
I think it's cool, but here's my thing. And just to be clear, Google has not announced the Pixel 4. What they're doing is slowly leaking information, such as what it's going to look like. They did last month. This month, it's, hey, up at the top in that bigger bezel. The reason it has a big bezel is because it's got face unlock dot projectors like the iPhone and IR cameras for face unlock and a light sensor and so on. But it also has the Project Soli radar chip. And that's the ultrasonics that you mentioned. Yes, it's cool. And they have a 20-second video showing how you can unlock your phone with your face, the Pixel 4 being the phone, and you can swipe over the phone or in front of the phone to scroll through web pages and content and such. And I think I'm not jazzed about it because we've seen this before. Regardless of the technology used, it doesn't add or hasn't yet added a tremendous amount of value. So that's my big beef with this. But you feel otherwise. Go ahead.
The reason I feel otherwise is because I am not chained to my smartphone. This is not a smartphone technology. This is a television technology. This is a, I'm cooking and I have a display, a Google Home display, and I want to move it without touching or using my voice. That is what this is. So imagine your Google display. I know we both love ours. Imagine being able to gesture to it and have something happen.
I don't disagree with anything you said.
In your car. There are places where voice is cumbersome and like, you know, saying, hey, G, skip. You know, when you have the microphone, the music stops and that sort of thing. So this is why I'm excited.
And I get that. I think the difference is you're looking at the broader picture and I'm looking at a product that has no need for a Soli radar chip in it.
So the reason they're putting it there, I would argue, is to build the economies of scale necessary. Although not in a Pixel phone. I'm sorry. Bad me. It's basically to get the economies of scale that make it cheap enough and reasonable enough to put in these other devices. That's...
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it. I suspect, though, they'd be better off putting it in a new smart display because they probably sell more of those than they sell Pixel devices, quite honestly.
You're probably right. All right. Google, ignore the Pixel 4. Put it in the next Nest. Is it the Nest Hub? What do we call it?
The Google Nest Hub.
The Google Nest Hub.
Yes.
One day I'll get that right. All right. Yeah. So that's our disagreement du jour or of the month. I'm like, du mois? I don't know. But let's talk about Amazon Ring. And this has been coming up, this idea that Amazon with its Ring doorbells is building a panopticon, I believe Will Oramus called it. It's that it is working with police departments, or Ring is working with police departments to gather data on neighborhood crime. So when a crime occurs and people have Ring doorbells, there's a neighbor's app. And what happens is the police can ask for the video doorbell recordings from people in the area. They have to have a case number. And they have to ask permission. So they can't just pull this data. But what's squicking people out is the police are actually working with Ring and are getting incentives from Ring to promote the Ring doorbell specifically. And the more people who sign up for the neighbors app, the more doorbells the police department gets to dispense.
Mm-hmm.
And this rubs people the wrong way. And I get why. And Ring says they've put in safeguards by the fact that, you know, the police can't just go through a database and scroll through random doorbell footage. You have to have a case number and you have to request it and the person has to agree to give it. But police are promoting one particular type because they're getting one particular type of video doorbell. That's one. Two, it does turn a neighborhood walk into kind of the potential of being surveilled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I have a camera that faces front of my house, and people do walk past. People obviously drive past. They probably don't know that they're being caught on camera. I've talked about this once before on the show. It's like, I almost feel like I should have a sign that says, hey, just so you know, there's a camera here, and you walk past, you're going to be on it. I don't use the data for anything other than when I need to, such as when my car was hit, and that was a good thing. I needed to do that because the person said they didn't hit my car, and clearly they did.
Let me ask you then. So
yeah.
If, for example, there was a crime, you know, down the street or two streets over, and police said, hey, I know you don't, do you have a Ring?
I don't have a Ring. Okay. No, that front camera is a Wyze, and then my front door, which is actually on the side of the townhouse unit, is a Nest Hello.
Okay, so maybe they saw your camera, whatever. So mm-hmm. They call sure. And they say, hey, can we get your camera data for this crime that was someone stole a computer, broke in, you know, two streets over, and we want to see if we can catch which way they turned on your street or something.
Right.
Would you say yes?
I probably would view everything first myself because I wouldn't want to send the video of any of my neighbors doing something else incriminating.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So then you would view it first. And if your neighbor is out smoking weed on the front porch, you might be like, nah.
I mean, I could scrub that out and myself. I could edit that video, obviously, because it has, and it's my right to do so as far as I'm concerned. And it's not hurting the police for what they're looking for. So that's probably what I would do. So I'm a good neighbor, I think.
So with neighbors, they just get the raw file. So that's an interesting.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And there's no, and I've looked up in Document Cloud as some of the documentation between Ring and the, some of the police departments. You know, there's nothing in there that kind of allows for that. They just get it, like you said. I mean, I want to help. If there's an issue and I can provide helpful evidence, I'm happy to do it. But it's a personal choice. Everybody's going to feel differently about this.
Yeah. So Kevin isn't in conflict with me this time. He's now in conflict with himself. All right. We'll see if we're in agreement on this issue. The FTC last week said that it will host a workshop on COPPA, the Children's Online Protection Privacy Rule. And the idea here is they're going to host a workshop to see if changes are needed. And this is news. And I was surprised that people did not pick this up very much. And the reason is because the FTC every 10 years is supposed to check out and see how the COPPA rules are doing. So do they fit the current standards? Yes or no. The last time they did it in 2013. So they're doing this earlier. And the reason they're doing it is because they're worried about voice speakers.
Yep.
What they're going to ask is a bunch of questions of the industry. They are going to be talking about websites because I know YouTube and children's access to advertisements and children's access to various other things on YouTube is a problem. But they also are going to be talking about what are the implications for COPPA enforcement raised by technologies such as interactive television, interactive gaming, or similar interactive media. And should the commission consider a specific exemption to parental consent for the use of education technology in schools? And there they actually do talk about voice as part of that. And then should the commission modify the rule to encourage general audience platforms to identify and police child-directed content uploaded by third parties? That's the YouTube. We're going to call that the YouTube question. So they've published something in the Federal Register, and I'm going to link to that because that talks a lot about all the questions they're asking. But in the education section, for example, it's like, hey, should schools use this technology? And also, what about the collection of audio files as a replacement for text, where the audio files are promptly deleted in line with what the agency had issued a couple years ago? And this is, again, related to the fact that Amazon and I believe Google have both come out saying, yeah, we can't delete everything because then the service wouldn't work.
These are, I scrolled through this. There are tons of questions here. And I actually have a question for you. And that is, because it says you can comment on this on or before October 23rd, 2019, does that mean this is for public comments? So could parents actually read this and respond to some of these things?
Yes.
Hmm.
I think there's a lot of meat here. I'm actually going to spend a lot of time with this. And I'm probably going to come up with like things that I think are, as a parent, that I care about. Because my daughter uses a lot of this technology. Schools, we actually just had a question from somebody who was a teacher who wanted to have their class do voice skills.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a lot of stuff here. Like, should parents be able to request deletion of personal information collected by operators of technology? Probably. And that's within the school setting. But at the same time, I understand why companies want some of this data because they need to make their services better.
Yeah, I mean, I see this as you said, an early review, basically because of the rise of smart speakers, microphones, et cetera, both at home, school, et cetera. The technology is quickly changing. We're finding out more about what really happens with your recordings. We're going to talk about that some more in a second. I think it's smart of them to do this. I think what they're trying to do is kind of educate themselves a little bit and see how well are the current laws applicable? How often are they actually used? Such as, you know, if somebody requests, a parent requests deletion or review of their child's data, how often does that happen? And how often are companies complying with that, et cetera? I mean, this seems to be like a, let's research this a little bit more since the landscape has changed.
Right. I will say there have been plenty of app companies that have taken advantage of children, right?
Mm-hmm.
People, I mean,
sure.
If you can make money by taking advantage of children, it is literally like taking candy, or in this case, money from a baby. And so we see a lot of malicious, is it malicious? Is it nefarious? I feel like I've got the wrong words here, but shameful.
Slimy.
Yes. Slimy behavior on behalf of certain companies. And no, this isn't Google. This isn't Apple, but these are platforms that allow for slimy companies to come in contact with your children and get them to give data, give, I mean, I can totally see, you know, things asking for personal data from children just to maybe make it easier to hack someone. I mean, there's so much out there. Or you can ask kids questions like, what brand of milk do you have in your fridge? And it's like a little focus group and kids will think that's fun.
Sure.
So I think this is necessary. I think research is good. I'm going to spend some really hard time thinking about what makes sense. And I should mention this in here. The FTC wants to know also what kind of burden these rules will create on bigger companies, smaller companies, et cetera. So not every company is going to be able to create, like they have this neutral age gate concept in here, which is creating a subsection of your platform that is for people who don't have an age, which the assumption is they're kids. And if you, big companies can do that. Can small companies? I don't know. Anyway, that's what's happening here. If you want more information, I will link to the Federal Register and you guys can go read it for yourselves.
And comment.
All right, let's do some quick bits. Apple also uses contractors. Just like Google, just like Amazon, just like we said everyone would have to do as a form of QA. And these contractors can listen to your Siri recordings. Kevin, you want to talk about this?
Yeah, I mean, we just wanted to point it out because it would be unfair to point out the issues from other companies and then not point it out for Apple. Interesting to me is that the Apple Watch and the HomePod apparently had the most frequent sources of mistaken activations, I guess. And the contractor that the Guardian spoke with said that they could definitely hear a doctor and a patient, so they could hear medical history. They'd hear a car with engine background noise. It sounded like a drug deal. And then, of course, people engaging in intimate acts in the privacy of their home. So, you know, Apple's no different. Apple says less than 1% of all of these recordings were because of, you know, a false positive, an activation that was wrong. But that's a big number when you think about how many iPhones, watches, and such are out there with Siri.
Oh, yeah. We talked about this on This Week in Google, which is a show that Kevin is sometimes on and I'm a co-host of. And, you know, we were talking about it and not this particular issue. It was, I believe, the Amazon issue, and somebody's iPhone activated Siri, and poof,
right.
Suddenly there was a transcript happening. Ah!
Boom. So we all seem to trust Apple, and what about the other companies? What IoT companies do consumers most trust and mistrust? Well, PC Mag ran a survey on their own. 2,000 U.S. consumers participated back in May, and the results were kind of what I expected. As far as the trust, it was actually Google first, then Amazon, followed by Microsoft and Samsung. LG brought up the rear with 10%, and then Facebook was actually the least trusted. In fact, the mistrust chart, if you want to take a look at it, we'll link in the show notes, is off the charts for Facebook. The mistrust was 48% of consumers mistrust Facebook. Every other company in here in the survey was at 10% or less for mistrust. So I'm not surprised, are you?
I'm a little surprised. Well, they did this back in May before the big backlash over some of the, oh, they're listening to my voice recordings. So
yes, that could skew these results now, sure.
That could skew the results. And what I did find interesting, I guess Apple is not a smart home company or an IoT company, which is why it's not on here.
Well, Apple's not, they don't make TVs, nor does Facebook, obviously. They don't make smart displays. They just make the phones and the HomePod. Yeah, it's pretty much mobile devices aside from the HomePod, which we know hasn't really taken off. So I guess they're just not a big enough player to be asking about in this particular question.
Okay, that would have been interesting.
I would have had them on there.
Yeah. I was like, maybe we should conduct a survey. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of trust, there's another vulnerability in a webcam. And this one is the Armcrest IP2M blah, blah, blah. It's a cheap camera. In this particular case, you can connect to the audio stream of the camera and listen to this.
Right. Unbeknownst to you. So somebody could be listening at all times. There's no wake word or anything. It just is listening because of the vulnerabilities. It is a low cost, like a $58 camera, Amcrest. I don't know that brand. And I tend to stick with brands that I know for this very reason. Not that the big brands don't have their security issues too. But what concerns me is Amazon sells this, and I wish Amazon would start cracking down on selling things that aren't safe, number one. Number two, I think a lot of people bought this because it has nearly 12,000 customer reviews and 857 answered questions. That leads me to believe that a lot of people have this camera.
Yeah, and they thought it was legit. So the next question is, what is the company? And this was a rebranded hardware from another company, so they probably did the software. So the question is, are we getting a fix?
So this has a common vulnerabilities and exposures, or CVE number, it's officially reported. As far as a fix, it says NA for proposed. I don't know. It's been assigned to Tenable Network Security, Inc. So as of now, I do not see a fix.
All right. So in that case, unplug that camera.
Yeah,
unplug
that's your fix.
Unplug your camera.
That's your fix.
And we're done. Okay. And now it is time to answer our questions from a listener. This is the IoT Podcast Hotline, and it is sponsored by Affero. With the fifth largest IoT patent portfolio in the world, Affero provides a proven IoT platform that doesn't risk your brand. Affero customers have experienced as much as an 80% reduction in time to market and 10x higher activation rates. You can learn more at affero.io. Thanks, Affero, for sponsoring the IoT Podcast Hotline. Guys, we are doing this recording before we can actually announce our winner for the month of July. And we are moving into the month of August, where we have a new prize. So if you call us at 512-623-7424 to ask us your question, you will be entered to win an Ecobee Madam A-powered light switch. Woo!
Ooh, nice.
So if you have our favorite thermostat, which happens to be the Ecobee thermostat, and you're all in on this Ecobee ecosystem, and you need a light switch, this is the product for you. So we'll send that out to you if you enter to win. So give us a call. All right. Next week, we'll announce our winner for this month. Stay tuned for that next week. And I also want to say that last week, so much timing happening here. Last week, we talked about outdoor light bulbs, and we got so many people telling us that they use their Hue bulbs outdoors in Minnesota, in Sweden, in Norway. So we discussed the temperature ranges because I didn't live in a place where my outdoor Hue bulbs ever got below freezing. And Kevin wasn't using them for that. So he's not a Hue fan. But apparently lots of people use their Hue bulbs outdoors and they're just fine. So Dean, Richard, go forth and Hue. This week, we have a question about ceiling fans. Let's hear it.
Hey, Stacy and Kevin. This is Andre in Virginia. Thank you for your podcast and all the time that you guys put into it. I just installed a ceiling fan in my daughter's room, and it has an RF remote. It's, you know, not ideal to have to find a remote to turn off the light and leave the fan on. So I see that the Hampton, I guess, recommended the Bond hub to link, you know, your RF for the fan to Google Home, Alexa, whatnot. And I'm wondering if you have any other recommendations, any other alternatives to Bond, as in, really, I don't want to spend $90 for one device to control a fan light.
Okay, Andre, we have more work for you to do. And we may ultimately have bad news for you. So when I heard your question before you said you didn't want to do the Bond, I was like, oh, just get the Bond.
Mm-hmm.
That will solve all your problems. But I get it. $90 is a lot of money. You can find it for $70 on Amazon site. And I think sometimes it goes on sale, but still a lot of money. Get that. So we found a product that may work.
Right. It depends on your fan and your remote. And Andre, I sympathize because I'm in the same boat as you. I have a Hampton Bay fan and a remote, and I wish I could make it smart, but I've been frustrated and I didn't want to spend $90 on the Bond either. So what we need for you to do is see if you can find out the frequency that your remote uses. And we presume that is RF and not IR because you said RF. But in either case, if it's IR or RF, what do we find? Something from Broadlink, I believe.
Yes, we found the Broadlink RM33 Pro and the Pro Plus. This is like a little, it's an IR plus RF plus
it's
Wi-Fi.
It's like the Bond. It's very much like the Bond.
Yes. This is a $40, it may be $43, depending on who you buy it from, device. The challenge is it is only going to support 433 megahertz as the RF. So if your ceiling fan is 433 megahertz, you are great. But ceiling fans can operate at 315, 433, and several others. And the Bond actually supports all of those, which is why they recommended it. The two ways you can call Hampton Bay and figure this out, you can actually also look on the FCC sticker on your device. It may tell you there. Or you can take the serial number of your fan and look it up in the FCC database and see what RF it uses.
Or you could do what I would do. And that is just buy it from Amazon, try it. If it didn't work, I would send it back.
Okay, you can do that. The other thing about working with the Broadlink and tying it into Amazon or Google is that it works like a remote control for a TV. So you're going to have to tell Amazon that it is a television, but you can also do when you're setting it up. Or you can create a scene around it. So if you do the scene, then you create your own voice command and then it's going to recognize it. But you will still have to set it up as a television remote, just so you know.
Yeah. And one other possible gotcha. It is only supported on 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi. That's since it's a hub and you need the Wi-Fi to tie in your smart speakers. Just be aware, based on your home network, that this is a 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi radio.
Kind of a lot of gotchas there, but
yeah.
If the Bond is $70 and this is $40, is it worth $30 to have to call and do this? If it is, then do it. Or maybe it's not even worth $40. And then you'll be like, yeah, we're just going to work with a non-smart fan. I'm just going to make sure the remote's always by the bedside table.
I suppose I could always buy it and try it. I just don't know that if I have the exact same fan configuration that Andre has.
Yeah. There is also a Hampton Bay Universal Remote for $50 that works with Wink, but you'd have to buy a Wink Hub, which then puts you back above the price.
So exactly.
We're not recommending you do that for a couple reasons, but mostly.
But maybe you already have a Wink. Who knows?
If you already have a Wink, then Google Hampton Bay Universal Remote with Wink, and you will see it. It's at the Home Depot. Okay. That is a less than satisfactory answer, or it just.
But that's not our fault.
No. If you would like your own satisfactory or maybe less than satisfactory answer to a smart home question, give us a call at 512-623-7424, and you'll also be entered to win that Ecobee smart switch. All righty. It feels like the end of the news segment of the show and time for us to talk to our guests. So please stay tuned for Mike Nefkins, who is the CEO of Resideo, the publicly traded spin-out of Honeywell's security and smart home business. We're going to be talking about why they're making all these acquisitions and the future of the smart home. You'll want to hear it after a message from our sponsor. This week's sponsor is Nutanix. Hey, everyone. We are taking a quick break from this week's Internet of Things podcast for a message from our sponsor. This week's sponsor is Nutanix, and I have Sacham Vaghani here from the company. So Nutanix, we all think of that as a leader in hyper-converged infrastructure, and now it's offering products and services in the IoT area. Can you tell us what drove the company in this direction?
It's been quite a revelation, Stacey. On the business side, we realized there's going to be three orders of magnitude more devices doing enterprise IoT in the real world. So we figured if we are going to be true to our mission here at Nutanix, which is to simplify enterprise computing wherever it exists, at the edge or the core or the cloud, we ought to address the IoT problem. And from a technology perspective, it's equally fascinating because we've spent a lot of time inventing computing solutions for the world of humans. And now IoT requires us to think about an operating stack for the world of machines.
Can you talk about some of the customer scenarios you've encountered as you've gone to market?
There's quite a lot of diversity in the type of use cases we've seen. For instance, we've worked with customers in retail and solved some here and now problems for them around making existing processes more efficient. Things like loyalty member identification in their stores or loss prevention systems and so on. And we've also worked with them to create new experiences. Things like the equivalent of Amazon Go for Fortune 500 food services customer we work with. In manufacturing, we've seen use cases around existing data that is collected on the factory floor from machines, using machine telemetry data to do predictive maintenance, to new experiences. We help a meat producer customer of ours go from a human-based meat inspection process where they inspected one out of every 1,000 packages to an individualized inspection process of every package using AI. We see similar trends in oil and gas around using machine telemetry data at oil rigs.
And what are your high-level learnings so far?
There's so many, but let me share a few in the interest of time. For one, when it comes to IoT, there's a lot of talk around new projects, but IoT is as much about respecting the present as it is about building for the future. For example, in manufacturing, we need to respect all the OT infrastructure that is already in place and the data collection that is already in place while we enable these end users, create new business processes and experiences around leveraging that data. We've also seen that people need to not only budget about technology in IoT, but they also need to plan around people and processes. It's going to be a vastly different set of skills and processes that are needed to apply IoT concepts at scale. And last but not the least, we need to budget for failure, just like how we budget for success. IoT projects take a long time to prototype and then to productize. And people need to think about the entire lifecycle of the project as opposed to a point in time when they need to roll out the IoT project in production.
Where can people go to find out more about Nutanix and its efforts in the IoT?
To find out more and to sign up for a free trial, your listeners can go to nutanix.com/IoT.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Internet of Things podcast. This is your host, Stacey Higginbotham, and today's guest is Mike Nefkins, who is the president and CEO of Resideo. Hello, Mike. How are you today?
Hi, Stacey. Doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
I am really excited. So, gosh, way back October of last year, Resideo spun out of Honeywell, and I'm going to ask you how that's going. But first, I have to say congratulations. You moved to my former hometown of Austin, and I hope you were having a great time there.
Yep, been here about 2 months, and so far so good. A bit hotter than we expected, but we're really enjoying it. We opened our new headquarters about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we are fully up and running here.
Excellent. All right. Let's just get started with getting an update on... Actually, we should tell people who may not be familiar or didn't read the articles I wrote about this, but talk to us about why Resideo spun out of Honeywell and what Resideo is today.
Well, actually, the process started about a year and a half ago, where Honeywell, being a mega industrial corporation, has multiple business lines from aviation to buildings to chemicals, etc. And what they realized was they had a few businesses that were actually becoming more consumerized than what their strategic focus was becoming. Honeywell focuses on creating cockpits for airplanes and creating huge building solutions. So there were four businesses in Honeywell. One was a distribution business, which is low voltage security. The other was a comfort business, which is really focused on air and thermostats. We had a security business as well, and then what we call an energy business, which is really gas and electric. And they brought those four businesses into one, and that is what Resideo is. And we spun out of Honeywell in October into our own publicly traded company. We do about $5 billion annually right now. And we're bringing all those assets together now to really focus on the smart home. And what makes us unique is we don't sell to consumer direct. We do everything through the pro channel. So our business has spent over 100 years building up the pro channel. We have a very, very loyal customer base. And that's what we're focused on. So we're bringing those businesses together to bring a really unique experience to the pros and to the homeowners. And we're calling the company Resideo Technologies. Now, interesting enough, we do still have the Honeywell brand. We're calling it Honeywell Home on certain products. So the pros will continue to see that going forward.
Oh, yes. I was going to ask. I'm like, oh, but I still have Honeywell. And also, I feel like I can buy Honeywell thermostats at Home Depot or someplace like that. Like the T, it's maybe the T9. There's a lot of Ts, T5 also.
That is correct. We do about 3% of our business through Home Depot, Lowe's, Best Buy. So really, really what it is it's just to kind of get our name out there. Although most of those products are not do-it-yourself products. I mean, you can buy them, but you need a pro to install it. We're learning about the consumer through Home Depot. We want that touch point. They're great customers of ours. But our focus is really to sell through the channel.
Okay. You and my husband agree on that. We need a pro to install thermostats thing. I personally am like, eh. I could do it.
I always tell people, don't cut the red wire, bad things will happen.
All right. So let's talk about some of the acquisitions you guys have made, because you've done about three. I believe Buoy was one of the first. It was a device that you could stick on your water main, and it would monitor flow. It would shut things off. It was very cool. I saw it at CES a couple of years ago. You acquired the IP from Whisker Labs, and you bought Lifeware. So that's kind of a lot happening here. So what is the strategy behind all of that?
Yeah, so let me go back and just talk a little bit about the home itself. So, there's been so much focus on the smart home over the last years, and you see this kind of single product adoption, right, where people are buying a product, I almost call it more of a gadget, that you can put in your home. It's an awareness camera, can be a doorbell, whatever it may be. But what's really happening is there's so many more critical systems or networks in the home that until those are being monitored and you're able to get the data and really be able to understand how you could be preventative to those, we consider the home not to be smart. And really the best example I have of this is, if you think about the home itself, you've got your security network, which, most people have some kind of security system. And that's been monitored for the last 30, 40 years. You can buy monitoring. So if you're out of the home, an intruder comes in, you get an alert, somebody calls the police, they come. But the rest of the home, the water network, the air network, meaning indoor air quality and temperature, the gas network, your electrical network, really the homeowner is left all to themselves to have to figure out how to maintain and how to ensure that those things are working properly. So what we're looking to do is we are looking to take monitoring from security and start to monitor those other networks in the home, your water, your air, your gas, and your electrical, so that we can provide a whole home experience. What we're saying is your home needs to be safe, it needs to be efficient, and it needs to be healthy. So that's the big change. And the acquisitions that we're making are to solidify, our value proposition to the pro and to the homeowner in those areas. So on your water network, we want to make sure that we can tell the homeowner what's happening in the water network in your home. Do you have any leaks? What kind of water flow do you have? At the right point in time, is your water safe to drink? You know, all of those things. And, you know, the best example of that on water is, you know, when you leave your home, if you have a leak, you won't know about it. If you're losing hundreds of thousands of gallons of water because your sprinkler system is leaking, you're not going to know about it until you find a wet spot outside or until you see a really crazy water bill. So what we're going to be doing is, just like in security, if somebody breaks into your house or if you have a window open, the moment that there is a pressure issue or we're seeing that water is losing pressure or leaking between 2 and 4 in the morning, we will advise the homeowner, just like security, that you have a problem in your house. And even better, we'll send what we're calling our home hero, which is our contractor, immediately out to help you fix that. The same goes for the air network. There's so much focus on thermostats. The reality is no one really cares about is your temperature 69 or 70 anymore. I think the industry's got that figured out. What people care about now is their well-being in the home. They want to know that their indoor air quality is good. They want to know that it's safe, and they want to be able to do something about it when there's a problem. So the same there. We're going to be providing alerts when your indoor air quality is not in a satisfactory area. And then really looking at the home behind the wall, there's so much going on behind the wall. You have a gas network. You have an electrical network. The best example I like to give there is, you know, your hot water heater. I mean, how many people have come home, turned on the hot water for a shower, you know, had a long day, and there's no hot water? Well, the reality is that hot water heater will tell you a couple of weeks before it's either leaking or it's either using more electricity. And we're going to be able to proactively tell you, hey, there's a change going on in your hot water heater, and we're going to send out a home hero to take a look at it and fix that unit before it actually breaks. So that's what we're looking to provide to the homeowner. If you take a look, buoy is key for us on the water line. Whisker Labs is going to help us with energy management to ensure we can save the homeowner money on their energy. And LifeWare is going to support us on providing data in the on the gas and electrical networks.
Excellent. So it sounds like you have most of this figured out. I'm curious on the HVAC network and air. Is that something you guys have everything there? Or do you need to buy anybody else?
I think this will be a constant, you know, as new technologies come forward, we'll be adding in small tuck-in acquisitions to help us go faster. So, you know, we have a majority of what we need to have a very good offering. You know, we're always looking to see, you know, where else we can pop in some new tech to really drive what I call either savings to the homeowner, improve time, or improve the homeowner's well-being.
Okay. And with this in mind, I like to break this down because I feel like we're in the middle of a very big transition that's between this, we're monitoring it or we're just reacting to things as they're happening, to what is, I would say, a much smarter home. And to make this happen, it feels like, you know, we need monitoring and then we need that layer of intelligence. It sounds like you're arguing that we need a layer of professional services to come in and deal with it when something happens.
It's both. So what's really interesting is we have all the products already on those main lines or main networks in the house. And a lot of our competitors, they are dying to get in these networks. That's why they're losing hundreds of dollars on every hardware gadget they throw into the house, because they want data on the homeowner. We are already in 150 million homes. That's what makes us unique. We already have the contractor network that wants to work through us. So what you just said is exactly right, right? And I think you used the word, and I loved it, there's gadget burnout right now. So somebody's got to bring this information together. And what we're looking to do here is, most people that have a smart home, they'll have a folder on their phone that probably has 20 or 30 applications. And that's how you integrate. You have to integrate through these various applications. And frankly, it's a pain. So what we're looking to do is, we're looking to put an intelligence layer on top of that. It will be one application that allows us to drive all of the information on those networks I just described, and allows your pro to see the data that you want them to see and get alerts so that they can come out and help you. So we, our vision, and this is why we have headquartered in Austin, we've got a big development team here. Our vision is that we will build an application that will be an application that people use, you know, the 15 applications or so they use in their daily life. It will be simple, and it will allow you to monitor, and it will allow you to see the information you need on those critical products. My favorite example is hot water heaters, right? I mean, nobody wants to go deep into a hot water heater and see what are the corrosive levels, what's going on from the exact temperature in the tank, and, you know, how is the gas burning, you know, what's the control unit doing. People don't care. They just want to know, is it working properly? And if not, let me know. And that's the kind of information we're going to be providing. And when we let the homeowner know, we'll let the pro know as well, so that you can get immediate help.
Okay, now this is a big shift for people. And I think what's happened in the smart home is people have bought gadgets because there is a subset of homeowners who are like, hey, neat, it's a cool gadget. I want to play. I want to have fun. And I think that's where we've been for a while. The challenge here is this is expensive, and I don't know if a lot of people are ready to invest in something they can't see. So there's like the Cydia channel that offers you cool AV stuff, lights that turn on and off, and it's very funky and fun, and people will pay for that. It seems really tough to get people to shell out for something like, we're going to make sure your hot water heater doesn't leak. And I know it's a big deal, and I know people hate it when it happens, but I am really impressed by people's short-sightedness sometimes in terms of when I ask them about, hey, would you buy it like a buoy system or something like that? And they're like, ooh, for $500 or $600, I don't know. How do you convince people that they want this, they need this, and they're going to pay for it? Or how do you make pricing that works for that?
You got it. So look, the first thing is we're going to be launching in December, and we're going to be launching exactly how these models will work. So much more to come on that. But what I can tell you now is think of it really as a lot of homeowners. I think 20% of homeowners right now in the country buy a warranty for their home, warranty services, or they buy their HVAC pro. They buy an additional warranty. That pro comes out twice a year, changes the filter, or takes a look at things. So what we want to do is we want to do this through the pro as a warranty. Think of it that way, where everything will be included. There are going to be certain models where you can either buy the hardware yourself up front, or you can actually do it through pay-as-you-go monthly warranty. So that's our big announcement that we'll be having at the end of the year. And we're looking to make this very simple for the homeowner. And frankly, we feel it's going to save them a lot of money. You know, if you're paying for two or three warranties in different parts of your house, you can combine that into one. And even better, I'll give you an example. If you have the water protection service that we have, you can print off a certificate. You can go right to your insurance company and get a fairly significant discount on your insurance. So we're confident we're going to be able to save the homeowner quite a bit of money by doing this and save them time and hassle, you know, when they have to fix stuff, because we'll be able to prevent a lot of it.
Given the direction that you're moving in this idea of monitoring all the vital systems in the home, how important is it that everything in the home be made by Honeywell? I'm sitting in a house that I'm sitting in a rental house, but even in my older house, I mixed and matched my brands. So what is the philosophy there?
You know, Honeywell has typically been an open company, and we are looking to add many, many partners to our service. You know, just like through our ADI branch, we have the largest distribution of low voltage security in the world with 200 locations. We only sell about 15% of what's sold through that as Resideo products. So we want to make sure that, you know, the homeowner is able to get a whole home solution. And if the Resideo product is the best for that, great. And if there are others out there that complete the solution, we will partner. We'll make sure that that's accessible to the homeowner.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense. But now let's talk about kind of the role of the pro, because I'm hearing a lot of pro install, pro everything. Does this mean you guys are going to back out of the DIY space?
Well, we're really not in the DIY space. Like I said, about 3% of our revenues is in DIY right now. And what you just said is so important. I mean, the real battle going on right now is pro versus DIY. And we are doubling down on the pro. Our point of view is that the house is only going to become more complex. And with that, you need support. And if you take a look at your daily life, right, for your body, you have a physician. For your car, you have a mechanic. Office buildings have building managers. But again, for the home, we leave it to the homeowner, who is really not trained or doesn't have the time or skills to manage a lot of these systems in the home that are behind the wall. Sure, they can maybe manage a gadget or two on the wall, but we're going to focus on elevating the professionalism of the pro, making them a home hero, and helping support the homeowner with all those critical systems. Look, there's still going to be gadgets that you can buy and, you know, throw on, you know, put on your table and do everything you want, people want to play with. And so there will be a DIY market that will continue. But for these big critical systems around water, around gas, around electrical, around security, our point of view is these are pro products. And by doing so, you know, we can save the homeowner time, money, and improve their well-being.
Let's talk about the impact to your bottom line or to Resideo's bottom line. So this is a big company. And part of, I know that you've talked about in previous earnings calls, has been the shift to recurring revenue. So things like monitoring services. How do you guys envision both making that flip from a product to a services kind of company? And what's that going to look like?
You know, we're starting that now. The first piece is going to be bringing the multiple applications we have together into one. So that's the first step. You know, when we do that, we're going to be able to offer the pro and the homeowner, we're going to be able to offer them, you know, a straight up sale of product, if that's what they choose, or we'll be able to offer them a subscription service so that they can really get the service and just pay as they go. And we will keep their tech up to date in their home. So, you know, in 3 years, you know, if they have a thermostat through us in 3 years, we'll replace it to the next newest one if they so choose. So we're starting that flip now. We already have a chunk of our business, you know, that has recurring revenue. And yes, we're looking to grow that. So, you know, I've told the market that, you know, that recurring revenue for us in 2 to 3 years will be double or triple of what we have now. And we're confident we can make it through that knothole. You know, for us, the recurring services, if the quality is right and we can do this right, the margins will be higher. And we also think the value will be better for the pro and for the homeowner. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Excellent. But how do you adjust your business to deal with the fact that you're no longer selling a product, but you're really selling this relationship over time with the customer?
Yeah, and that's really well said. That's exactly right. What we want is we want a proactive, continuous relationship with the customer. We want Resideo to be the home hero. And our vision in the future is that, you know, when homes are built, they will be Resideo certified homes that have all this equipment in there so that when you move into the home, you can just turn on the service and all of those critical networks are monitored and your home is safe, efficient, and healthy. That's what we're looking for. That's the long-term vision.
Excellent. All right. Let's move from the future of Resideo to just broad questions about building devices. I have to ask, tariffs are a big topic now. I'm seeing some companies push out higher pricing because of them. How is that affecting you guys?
At this point, there is no effect. A majority of our products are made in Mexico on the border, so in the trade-free zone. So, you know, we went through a bit of a scare when, you know, the U.S. and Mexico were talking about tariffs. But it looks like we made it through that. We also do a lot of manufacturing in the U.S. and a lot in Eastern Europe as well. So we manufacture close to where our markets, our end markets are, which is the position we like. And look, we're just going to have to kind of roll with what's happening politically and economically, just like everybody else. But I like our hand versus having everything done in China. If something changes, you know, we'll have to mitigate that. But we like the hand we have with our manufacturing footprint right now.
Okay, well, Mike, thanks so much for coming on the show this week. I really appreciate it.
Yep, thank you. Enjoyed it. You know, always fun to do this.
That's it for this week. Thanks so much for listening. And remember, if you'd like more IoT news, sign up for my newsletter at stacyoniot.com. We'll see you next week.